Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm Matt Boothman, and with me are Lucy Bailey and Anda Winters, the co-artistic directors of The Print Room, a brand new 80-seat venue in Notting Hill. Lucy, Anda, welcome to Theatre Voice. Let's start, first of all, with your relationship and how you met, because you've both got very long, distinguished careers in the theatre. Lucy, you as a director, and Anda, yourself as a producer and designer. So when did you first kind of run across each other?
I think it was about 12, 13 years ago we met at the party, and also through Gog Magogs that Lucy used to run. She was artistic director of that group. And this is how our relationship and long-term friendship started.
Okay, so you are the co-artistic directors of The Print Room, this new venue where we're now sitting. What made you decide that you wanted to co-manage a venue, or how did that relationship kind of come about?
I think it was all Anda's fault. I think she was the one who first mooted the idea of setting up our own company and finding a space. Actually, primarily it was about finding a space to have our own theatre in. And I think it happened about 4 years ago that Anda first suggested this, and that we should look for a theatre. And we literally got into a car, Anda's car, and looked for a space. We drove all around this area and Kensal Rise. And went into certain buildings looking for something exciting and different. And it was Anda who actually found this space.
Okay, and did you find this space by driving around? Because it's not exactly visible from the road.
Actually, it was recommended by a friend of ours who used to have a design store virtually next door. And they pointed us to this space.
Okay. And so do you both have kind of very similar artistic tastes, or do you kind of pull against each other? Like, because co-artistic direction is quite a kind of, it can potentially be a difficult relationship to manage, because you're both kind of trying to create something, and if your visions are kind of pulling in different directions, then that can cause problems. So do you both bring something different to the relationship, or are you both kind of very much looking in the same direction?
I think we bring something different. I think we're going to have to find our feet together. We've only just begun in the sense of co-artistically directing the space. I mean, on the other hand, we spent 3 years together creating the space and working on it and having little events within it, building up to this moment of opening it. So in some ways, we've got to know each other even, you know, intensely well over the last 3 years. But it is a slightly different thing actually having to co-artistically work together. And I think we do bring something utterly different. I mean, obviously, I come from theatre direction, and I come from a sort of mixed background of music theatre with the Gog Magogs, actually opera originally, then music theatre with the Gog Magogs, and then straight plays. So that's what I bring to the table. And then, Anda, you I've switched to you now.
Oh,
you have to actually say that.
I think we're going to say off. Well, I do also come from theatre background, art background, and bit of music. I think as we are similar, we're quite different, have different views at the same time. My belief in Lucy and in whatever her vision on theatre is, it's 100% behind her.
So, I mean, coming as you do from one from a direction and one from a kind of production background, is that kind of how the dynamic is working? Is it that you, Lucy, kind of work the artistic angle while Anda, you work kind of the logistical stuff? No?
No, we're trying to find our feet utterly together artistically. I think it's more that I think what we're doing is we're a great combo is how I see it, and that my experience is more with plays and music theatre, and Anda, I think, brings a whole other side of the art world onto the table. And that's what we're trying to get space to be, not just theatre. We want it to be a very surprising mix of work. I think we're both wedded to the idea of the theatre being the core work, the real sort of central hub of the space, is going to be obviously performance-based. But within that word, performance-based, we take quite a wide look on that word, so that we will include dancers, musicians. In a way, it reflects both of our sort of maverick lives in the arts world.
Okay, all right. Well, let's talk about the Print Room itself then. Because I haven't seen it, it's a brand new space. I know you've just been rehearsing in there. Can you kind of describe the space?
It's a most beautiful, simple, serene space. And I mean, Anders put the most enormous physical work into it. I come in and I get terrified to even put a nail in or paint it. I don't know why. It's been something all my life. I don't want to feel I'm going to ruin something. I think it's to do with being a director and not wanting to pull the set down by mistake, you know. So the huge physical activity, Anders really headed. But we've made the decision together. You know, we've put down a floor, we've put up blacks, we've put in lighting. It's a very low-ceilinged warehouse, but with beautiful windows and a sloping roof and blinds that go the whole length of the room, and it gives it this incredible light. So we're very lucky to have the space, because it's sort of everyone who goes into it, they smile as they walk into it. It's literally a reaction. They just go, ah. And it's to do with the light, and it's to do with something to do with the serenity of the space.
Yes. And you don't expect it as you walk through the street. I mean, you saw it, you kind of think, oh, God, where am I? And then you walk into this space with a lovely garden, beautiful light. There's a certain warmth and...
And the building used to be a graphic design studio, yes. Is that right? And that's where the name
is. Yes, but
from.
When you say studio, it sounds all very sort of pleasant. It was actually, when we found it, it was full of huge machinery. I mean, this is the days before computers had completely taken over. So it was impressively kind of mucky and feeling more like a warehouse or even a factory. It had 40 to 60, I remember, Philip now saying, 40 to 60 employees. And because
enormous
it had been...
machinery.
Yes. And it's been neglected for 15 years. It has stood completely empty. So it had this kind of strange atmosphere of dirt and dust and the vine growing through into the room. And it was actually, in some ways, it would have been an amazing space to do a piece of theatre in if you could have got it past health and safety. it was a very imaginative space. But we cleared it all out, and that took a long time.
Okay.
It's almost like there was no light for 15 years, like everything stopped. Even the clock on
yes.
the wall.
You still
so imagine that when you're there
and,
for the first time, yeah. It goes, oh, wow.
So now you've completely self-financed this theatre, haven't you? So, I mean, that's a kind of difficult prospect at the best of times. Mm. Is it more difficult at this time with the kind of the recession and cuts and everything? Or is it just kind of no more difficult than it would be at any other time?
Well, I'm sure it's going to be difficult, but...
I think it's a bold thing to do at this time.
Absolutely.
And I think in some ways, I'm sure the Arts Council is relieved that we're not at the moment knocking on their doors for money that has been so squeezed in a most terrible, sad way. So in some ways, I feel like we're pushing out a boat into this water in the hopes that we will float, and it's a very optimistic thing to be doing. And we will want, obviously, to bring other funding on... more and more funding on board as we go and prove that we're a strong vessel. But I hope that we'll not be, relying... At the moment, we're obviously not relying on Arts Council. We're trying to be self-independent, and that's in some ways, it's a great feeling.
Yeah.
Scary, but great.
I was going to ask whether you were, whether that was kind of a point of the theatre, was to kind of make that point that you can survive in this climate without that funding. But I suppose you've been... planning this for the last 3 years, haven't you? So it's just a kind of confluence of timing rather than anything
else. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
It wasn't a political point at all. It's sort of become, I think people's reaction to it has been amazing, because we get this sort of wash of emotion actually when we announce to people that we're doing it, simply because they're so pleased and thrilled to hear that something good is happening, something new, employing more actors and more writers, etc. It does feel a very, as I said, an optimistic gesture in these times.
Okay. You've touched briefly on the kind of work that you're going to be putting on here, a kind of very eclectic mix of kind of theatre-driven but with one-off kind of musical events. Do you want to just talk a bit more about that in kind of more depth? Like, what have you already got programmed? What's on your wish list? What would you love to see put on here?
Oh, what a great question. Shall we say a little bit about what we've already programmed?
Yes.
Do you want to...
No, you go ahead.
I'll just briefly say, we have taken on four young artists who we call the Prentice Devils, which is a real term. And the Prentice Devil is a sort of mischief-making apprentice to a printer. Actually, the printers were always perceived as really harsh people, Anda. Do you realise that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we read enough about it now. And the printers are horrible people, really like devil masters. Mm. And the Prentice Devils are these poor little apprentices, of whom many famous writers have been. Among them, but anyway, our young artists, who are emerging artists, are, and it reflects something of our what we're trying to do here. One is a singer, and one is a choreographer, and two are directors. And we want to add to that. We want to add visual artists as well. as writers, but we've asked them to really develop new ideas for the space. They're not paid at all. They bring in their own ideas, they use the space free, and those ideas we may indeed then develop to become fully fledged pieces. So straight after the Pasolini, we have what we call, what's it called?
And we'll talk a little bit more about the Pasolini in a moment.
Yes, we have basically a launch of Petra's album. She's a singer. And the Devils are working together on that because Petra, as a singer, wanted to extend her language physically and theatrically. So we decided to put the four Devils together in one room and say, OK, now work together and see if certain parts of this, what is actually a very gentle kind of gig, could become more theatrical and more physical. And that's what they're doing. They're doing three nights of Petra's album. And we follow that after Christmas with an Alan Ayckbourn play, which is a brilliant, fairly, I would say, undiscovered thriller. It's a sort of ghost story come murder thriller.
This is Snake in the Grass.
Yes. And Ayckbourn fans, of course, will know about it, but a lot of people don't. It's amazing. You say it and they go, what? Never heard of it. And it's very, I think it's very unlike a lot of his work. It's horribly frightening. And it explores the psychology of these two sisters, and indeed two lovers as well, brilliantly.
Okay, and the Pasolini, which we'll talk about in a moment, that you're launching the venue with, is another kind of not particularly well-known work of a very well-known author. Is that part of the kind of remit of the theatre?
Yes. We would like to do is have plays that people either didn't hear about or that is a new work. Pasolini, I mean, Lucy's expert on Pasolini. He never really did any plays in England. Nobody ever heard of his play, except he never performed except films that we've known. But I think Lucy should tell you more about her work with Pasolini then.
But I think it's fair to say also, Andrew, that thing that we both have said, that we're looking for pieces that wouldn't be done in other theatres. Otherwise, why us?
Yes.
We're trying to put together a surprising and unpredictable programme of work, and that includes within our theatre choices, surprising choices. Mm. I think that's sort of a mixture of, I think throughout my life, I've always found these strange plays, and I've always fallen in love with them intensely, and then struggled in a way to get them on, simply because they're slightly off the radar, either in the author's work, or in, indeed an author that hasn't been heard of or celebrated, and I think they're really worth. It's a fantastic thing to put something on that no one's understood actually exists within that author's life's work, as in the Pasolini, but also say we may be doing a Tennessee Williams that also no one's seen for 25 years in this country at least.
Okay, which is that?
Sorry,
which is that?
We're not going to announce it.
Yeah, we can't say it. Quite,
oh, okay, we need big secret.
Yeah. Big secret. But that just really gives you a clue as to some of our thinking.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's talk about Fabrication then. Your launch play, which is by Pier Paolo Pasolini, who is a passion of yours.
Yes, and only because I have to confess, because I was asked by Hans-Werner Henze, who's an amazing German composer, must be now in his 60s, even perhaps his 70s, and at that time I was doing a lot of avant-garde music theatre. And he asked if I would come to Italy, where he lived, and meet a composer who lived in Rome, Italian, Giorgio Battistelli, and whether I would then adapt with Giorgio a novel by Pasolini. And he wrote this novel called Teorema, which he also made into the famous film Teorema with Terence Stamp. So I worked for at least 2 years on this amazing piece, working with an orchestra and 16 Italian actors, and then 6 actors of my own choice from England. The brief was none of the actors could use any words, so it was for silent actors and orchestra. And with the wonderful designer Simon Vincenzi, I think we produced the most, well, it was one of my most loved pieces of my own work, I'm most proud of. We did it in Florence, we did it in Munich Biennale, and then we were invited to come to London with it, just for a couple of one-off performances at the Queen Elizabeth Hall. So in my study of Pasolini, forced by Hans-Werner Henze, I started to see all his films, of course, and read his books. And I was just knocked out. It became, to me, it's become almost the biggest influence, artistic influence in my life, I have to confess. And I use him in different ways. If I'm working on a play, say, I remember Titus Andronicus at the Globe, I utterly understood how to do certain things by saying I have to go down a certain route that Pasolini would have gone down with these men. You know, you can get so much about physical physical male language from watching Pasolini's films.
And now, Pasolini is this, he's an Italian filmmaker, writer, intellectual, journalist. Very controversial in his time because of his kind of links to communism and his sexuality. But he doesn't tend to cover sexuality so much in his work. But Fabrication is a kind of exploration of sexuality,
yes,
isn't it?
I'm really surprised you said that because I think it's all about sex.
Really? Okay.
All his work's about sex.
You see, this is just me refreshing myself quickly on Wikipedia before I came here.
It's very political, but yeah, often at the heart of it, it's about sex.
Okay.
I think it was what tortured him and obsessed him and possessed him all his life. It's also the fact that he remained an outsider from sex. Yeah. You know, from the moment as a 5-year-old when he understood he was inclined towards the male. Mm. from then on, it haunted him and taunted him. He was constantly going over and over why he remained still attracted to the young boy. Not, I mean, in a pedophilic way. I mean, to youth. That he was his most extraordinary romantic adventures were when he was in his teenage time. He discovered sex with a boy. Mm-hmm. And then as he got older and older, that longing for that boy remained, which is very much at the heart of Fabrication. The shame and the guilt and self-disgust and self-loathing attached to a taboo love for a younger man, in this case the father and his son.
Yes, this is a kind of reverse Oedipus,
yes,
kind of story, isn't it?
Yes.
So what can people expect from your production of Fabrication?
When I say it's all about sex, he's very restrained as well. He doesn't, he's not... He deals with it as one layer in a very complex political statement as well. So the play exists on many levels, both sexual and familial and political. And that's what's so exciting about him. So he sort of zooms out from a father and son to a much larger world picture of how fathers kill their sons. And that, I think, is very... shocking, because I don't think it's discussed. I think it absolutely rings a bell, because we never lose sight of the fact that we create more and more wars, and fathers do indeed send more and more of their children, if you like, out to fight those wars, and more sons and daughters indeed, but sons as well, are killed. And that's really his premise, that this primal act of the father fighting the rival son as the son becomes virile and wanting to primarily extinguish that threat is also projected when you look at how we send all our sons, young men, into battle.
Okay.
That is another projection of the same primal instinct to kill our sons.
Okay. Now I assume with your kind of background with Pasolini that the decision to put on Fabrication was kind of... Did you table that, first of all? And how much persuasion did...
Well,
I know.
You say it, Andy, because this is I think we do work very instinctively together, in that I was going, Fabrication can't be the one to put on first. Amanda was the one who really supported that, and in a way, it's because she read it and she just loved it, and she was one of the very few people I found who read the play and understood it, and I don't know whether it's because she's Croatian.
Yeah.
I think something of that. I think I've given it to English artistic directors, and I've met with a lot of,
fear.
Fear.
I think it's a fear.
Yes.
I think it's an extremely provocative play, and very deep. And when I read it, I was totally stunned by it, and I called Lucy, I remember, and I said, you have to do it. And I know there was a little bit of fear in there. Maybe we should do this, or maybe we should do that as an opening to start with that. But I thought we do need to start with something that is different and that will shake up a little bit of people.
So you really want this to be kind of launching the venue with a bang?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think bringing to the table that we're not doing just easy work. We're not bringing, I don't know, a knees-up little dance number as the first piece, in a sense. We're saying, look, it's something really...
Yes.
Poor, get your heads around
it. It's
here.
Different.
Yeah.
And
It has a great deal of, as Anders said, it's provocative and it's political.
Yes.
So it's not easy.
It's shocking. I mean, people are not going to walk away laughing after seeing this play, right? It's really, I think you'll carry it for a few days after and really think about it, which I think
makes good play.
So. Okay, and when does that open? When can people get tickets and see that?
10th of November.
Okay, so that's Fabrication at the Print Room in Notting Hill on the 10th of November. Lucy Bailey, Andrew Winters, thanks very much for talking to Theatre Voice.
Thank you.